So, Zoom reminders, just remember to ideally camera on, mute on, raise hand when you want to speak. We're not using chat for anything substantive. And we will always prioritize member over observers when there's limited time and there's comments and questions. So, approve past meeting notes. Does anyone have any corrections or edits to the last month's meeting notes? All right. Did anyone read last month's meeting notes? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And they're so amazing because Colleen is the note taker. Motion by the co-chairs to approve the meeting notes.
I move to approve last meeting's minutes.
Second?
Second.
Okay. All right. And Patrick will review tonight's agenda.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you for joining us for our June Complete Streets Coordinating Council meeting. We have three items on the agenda tonight. Trying to keep it a little smaller in terms of the number of items, but hopefully allowing for more discussion. So we've got an update or a presentation really for the first time from the Office of Equity. So we're really excited. We've had that request a number of times from the committee. So we've been able to coordinate that and get that on the agenda tonight. So they'll be giving a presentation, have some time for discussion as well. We will then be providing information and seeking additional funding under the safety element for the Limberlost Road project extension. And then finally, we'll be getting an update and opening it for discussion around the neighborhood outreach plan for the Proposition safety program, which is that traffic calming on local streets. And then at the end of that, we'll hear some updates about the what happened at the IOAC last night. Really kind of a momentous meeting. So that was exciting, big progress on that side of the 411 program, as well as some updates regarding some traffic crash numbers, things like that have been requested by the chairs.
Okay, excellent. It's a full evening. Hope you've got your seatbelts on. So we have one new member, Luis, and I'd like to give you a chance to introduce yourself, appointed by the city manager.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name is Luis Salgado. I'm a green infrastructure project manager with Watershed Management Group. I'm also, pursuing a master's in water study policy at the University of Arizona, and, kind of like involved in trying to bring more of our hydrologic cycle into our streets and making them more complete. So I'd be able to be here. So thank you.
Thanks so much. Glad to have you. Okay, we will move right into our first topic, presentation from the Equity Office, Javier and Laura. And you should have screen share.
Certainly do. So, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to present to this committee. We always welcome any opportunity we have to certainly to talk about the topics of equity. And so we certainly welcome this invitation. And I see some familiar names and faces. So for those of you who I know, good to see you again. And for those who I've not met, a pleasure to meet you. And thank you for participating in today's presentation. I'll be actually co-facilitating this presentation with my colleague, Laura Sharp. Laura, if you want to say hello there. She's there. She's got her camera on for you. So I'm going to go ahead and start the presentation here and share my screen for everybody to see. All right, we're going to start that. Everybody seeing this okay? Confirm, hands up. All right, good stuff.
Yes.
Very good. All right, sorry, us city folk are more attuned to using Teams at this point. We forgot about how Zoom works, I think. Very good. So really quickly, talk about the path to equity and really what has gotten us to this point of establishment of an equity office and the kind of work that we're looking at and looking to accomplish within the city itself. and kind of how that delves into and works alongside of some of the work that you guys are doing and potentially looking at. So really quickly, Mayor and Council's initial vision of this was within the city of Tucson, equity means that our policies, policymaking processes, delivery of services, and distribution of resources account for the different histories, challenges, and needs of the people we serve. So back in May of 2020, Mayor and Council actually outlined the first equity policy program. It was an equity policy program that was identified for years 2020 to year 2025. By September of 2021, we actually worked with GARE, which is the Government Alliance on Race and Government Alliance on Race and Equity, to actually administer an employee survey to identify really some of our strengths and some of our weaknesses were when it came to equity. By March of 2022, our chief equity officer was hired. That is Larice Walker, our chief equity officer we have here. And by September of 2022, we were actually able to identify and hire our data project manager, which is Laura Sharp, who we have here with us this evening, as well as our employee engagement manager. It's my take on a bit of comedy there. Unfortunately, our employee engagement manager did leave recently and actually for a better opportunity to be closer to family. So we will be actually opening that position hopefully pretty soon, as well as a position for a community engagement manager. And then in April of 2023, I was brought on board to work as the equity management coordinator for the office. Really, our mission is purpose is to represent and reflect the unique experiences, perspectives, and viewpoints of our residents, businesses, and visitors. In partnership with city leadership and various stakeholders, the Office of Equity will champion equity as a fuel for innovation, inclusivity, and dismantling institutional barriers across the city. Some of our current efforts, including support to the city programs and departments with the goal of advancing equity. So this actually includes things such as providing resources to various departments and programs when it comes to equity, and how do you look at things through quote unquote an equity lens, if you will. Guidance and reviewing of policies and practices. So if the city is considering policies or if there's any practices that are being put forward, providing that office, obviously taking the opportunity to take a look at those and how those are potentially equitable or unequitable in affecting certain populations. And of course, assistance in the alignment of programs and initiatives. The support that we provide takes many forms. It includes, you know, training, capacity building, data analysis, which you'll learn a little bit more here in a bit, policy development, of course, community engagement. Some of our accomplishments to date, and mind you, again, we are a pretty fledgling office at this point, really with our chief equity officer being brought on board back in March of 2022. But the neat thing is that we've actually already engaged in an equity budget analysis for fiscal year 2022 and fiscal year 2023. So really the 2022 equity budget analysis served as a nice foundation for us to identify what our various departments were looking at when it came to their respective budgets and how they were considering equity. As it pertained to their budgets and how they were allocating funding towards programs and efforts as it related to equity. Fiscal year 2023, we actually asked for a second submission for their budgets. And so that submission round has completed, and we're actually looking right now going through the process of analyzing those submissions with hopefully providing a score back to departments by fall of 2023. And again, this will give us an opportunity to look at how we've essentially moved the needle from the previous fiscal year to the current fiscal year with respect to our programs and our funding and how that's being utilized to address equity issues within the city. We also have our departmental equity coordinators. So this initiative actually started in March of 2023. And what we did is we actually solicited all the various departments within the city of Tucson to identify and really offered that it was a voluntary opportunity for employees to self-identify and say, I'm interested in participating in this effort to bring more awareness around equity issues in my department, to bring resources back to my department, and really to kind of serve as a potential subject matter expert once this cohort concludes to my department as they look at the respective policies and programs and processes. And so the departmental equity coordinator started that work back in March of 2023. And so there's now moving quite forward along here, getting professional development, learning quite a bit with respect to what equity is, gain that foundational basis around what equity is, and identifying the various factors that can affect equity. We're also working with them to develop a capstone project. So really to highlight and to champion a project within each department that can help to move that needle towards equity within their respective departments. We've also established a newsletter and a lunch and learn series. So monthly newsletter that actually goes out to employees and to community stakeholders, identifying really a multitude of items, not just to mention certainly activities that have gone on with respect to equity, but also new news, information, programs, things that are being done around the realm that is equity, to share that information far and wide when it comes to that work that we're doing in the city and really the good work that we're doing in the city with our fellow employees and our community stakeholders. Also, the Lunch and Learn series serves as a great opportunity for our own employees to engage and learn about opportunities and things that our city is doing uniquely when it comes to equity. I think the unique thing about the city of Tucson is that we've always been very proactive and progressive when it comes to equity work. We might not have necessarily coined it as that term previously, but now what we have essentially is a vehicle to do so. And so I think, you know, with the work that we've been doing as a city and the continued good work that we do, we can now at least give ourselves kudos for some of that good work and certainly fine tune those areas where we need to when it comes to policies, programs, and policies and how they work with marginalized populations. And then last but not least is our very ambitious Tucson Equity Data Strategy, otherwise known as TEDS. And to talk a little bit more about TEDS, Laura is going to talk a bit about what that process is and the work that we're really exciting work that we're engaging on this front to provide as a resource and a tool for our employees and community. Laura?
Yeah, so do I need you to, go to next slide. So the Tucson Equity Data Strategy is a plan to provide the resources that city staff, community organizations, and citizens need to use data to advance equity goals. And so what that looks like is, next slide, these five things to start. And I'm going to try to keep these at kind of a high level and so that we can really ask a lot of questions later about, you know, what parts of these are interesting to you. But so there's five pieces. The first is a demographic collection standard. And what that means is these will be the standardized questions and answers that we ask when we survey the public and with internally for our city staff. So when we have our enterprise resource management program or when we just survey staff, these will be the demographics that we use. The citywide vulnerability index, I think that you all are somewhat familiar with the idea of vulnerability indices because these have been used in transportation. The idea with this is that right now we have a lot of different departments using different indices. They are using different data, different years, they're not being maintained, they're at different scales, different variables. And so we would like to bring the whole city onto one vision of what vulnerability means for the city so that we can all be on the same page when we communicate with the public, when leadership needs to make decisions, we're not focusing on different communities. The third piece is an open data site, and this is unique because it will provide census data that the city uses the most in geometries that we need the most. So currently you can download census data from the census website in blocks, block groups, tracks, places, you know, these sort of standard geometries. But when city is really doing research, they often want to look at neighborhoods or wards. And right now we don't really have staff who, you know, we only have a handful of staff who are skilled enough to do that apportionment or that translation from a census tract to some other boundary. And so this will be providing that always up to date. We'll have the 10-year data, then we'll have the ACS 5-year data and 1-year estimates. And those will be available in all of those common geometries, and they will be automated so that the data is always up to date. The fourth thing is a census lookup web app. And what that is really just a simple tool for people who don't need to really analyze the data or, you know, create, you know, their own dashboard or anything like that. They want to click on a location and say, I want all of the demographics within a 5-mile drive time or five minute drive time or within 5 miles, 1 mile, 10 miles. And that will generate that as a really nice looking infographic that has some interactive qualities, but you can also export it. And so I think that for a lot of people, that's going to be really the most useful tool. And then lastly is a toolkit, which is a lot of this is just guides on how to use these things. How do you use the demographic collection standards, templates for using those standards, information about the vulnerability index, how you can relate this vulnerability index to other variables that you might have, like pavement quality or tree canopy, whatever it is that your specific program wants to look at from a vulnerability perspective. And lastly, a big piece is these scripts that we're writing. So in a transformation script and an analysis script. And what that means is it will take that demographic data and process it and put it in a format that is most usable, because a lot of data needs processing before it can really be useful. And then also standardizing some of the analysis we do. I have a lot of people say, can you analyze this data with an equity lens? And when I started, I was going, what does that mean, an equity lens? And so we talked to our data department, our statisticians, and came up with some methods that we think help us break down different data based on disaggregated demographics. And so that will help streamline that for people who don't know how to do it, which is like most of us. And currently we have all of this is going out to the public and staff for feedback. We have a survey currently open right now that closes on the 30th. And I put a QR code here if you guys all want to take that. I can also put the link in the chat if that's permitted. This is collecting information on how we define vulnerability. So what should go into that index and the demographic collections we ask people. So you'll be asked a series of questions. Does not having a vehicle make you vulnerable, or how important is that to vulnerability? Does being in poverty, how important is that to making someone vulnerable? And then they answer the demographic questions and reflect on that and say, how did you feel answering these? Was your identity represented? And so once that survey closes on the 30th, we'll be opening another one based on those variables where we weight the individual variables for importance. So maybe poverty and education are both important, but people think poverty is more important. So this will be able to capture that relative importance. Next slide. Okay, so here I just did kind of a deeper dive on one aspect of TEDS that I think might be most applicable to this group. This is the vulnerability index. And here I've got three that the city is currently using: the equity priority index, which has been used in Move Tucson and in different parts of this Prop 411. What you see is that all of these are all measuring vulnerability, but they're all using different variables, different ways of defining low income. Is it 200% of the poverty line? Is it area median income? And different geometries. So one is at block groups, one is neighborhoods, one is tracks. And to my knowledge, none of these are being actively maintained. So they're stagnant. The data is not being updated. And so we're hoping that with our new index, that it will capture, you know, the essence of what everyone likes about these popular indices, while also getting that feedback from the community on what they think this means, so that we're not just telling people, by the way, you're vulnerable, you know, and that's why we're helping you, letting them kind of have a stake in what that means. And I think that's it.
Thank you so much there, Laura. Moving on to the next slides. For some reason, my deck is kind of slow here. There we go. All right, so equity in complete streets. What exactly would this mean, or what does this potentially look like? And in some cases, I feel like I might be speaking to the choir about what this looks like. One area that, you know, you can consider when it comes to equity is areas of historical disinvestment. These are areas that for various reasons might not have had the necessary infrastructure or resources placed in a certain area of community. Sometimes, a lot of times, this is in areas where it's communities of color, marginalized populations. And what's really important about considering this aspect of it is really how important Complete Streets plays when it comes to addressing the issues of health, safety, and crime. Having come previously from the world of public health, there's a topic known as social determinants of health, which some of you might be familiar with. And really the core focus of that approach is that essentially, if you want somebody to be physically active, for instance, or you want somebody to eat healthy, you have to just kind of address all the exterior factors before you can get to addressing that one key piece. And so when you want to start looking at addressing issues of health within a community, really Complete Streets is a piece that you would have to consider because sometimes people don't walk or be physically active because, for one, there is not a sidewalk that they have close access to. Number two, there might not be a park somewhere close that they can walk to, right? So it's going to become these master planning that needs to go into some of these pieces. Sometimes there's not street lighting that's available for them, so they don't feel it's safe, and so there's maybe perhaps issues of crime because of issues such as this. And so these are things that, are certainly aspects that want to be considered. Sometimes people don't feel safe when they walk near their streets because of lack of certain, perhaps mitigation factors to slow speed within a residential area. These are all pieces that play into this. And so certainly as you try to look at equity and developing an equitable approach to what a neighborhood has, especially when it comes to equitable approaches of health, safety, and crime, Complete Streets is certainly a great tool and resource to approach that with. Another aspect of it is certainly, for instance, our Storm to Shade program with the City of Tucson, or otherwise known as our Street and Stormwater Infrastructure Program. We really are, talking about, when you talk about Complete Streets, one of the aspects of it is certainly talking about shade trees, right, is an aspect of this. And so certainly one of the things we've noticed, and especially with that previous slide that Laura was presenting on, is our canopy coverage, right? It's a challenge that we've had here in the city, and most specifically, it's challenging in those areas, again, where we have populations of color, where marginalized populations exist. And so as you look to Green Streets, as you look at to not Green Streets, but Green Stormwater Infrastructure and Complete Streets, it's a good opportunity to try to certainly invest in those type of principles, again, because it's gonna encourage people to get out. It's going to encourage individuals to be able to walk out there, and considering our hot weather that we have and that we're experiencing right now, it helps. It's a reprieve, right, for these individuals. Tucson Million Trees, again, it falls right in line again with the larger campaign that is coming from the mayor's office to plant a million trees within the city of Tucson. So this is really a good opportunity and a great nexus, I think, as you guys look at work with Complete Streets. Also exploring those opportunities with Storm to Shade to put in some potential GSI work. And then the last big component is really effective community engagement. And I think, you've certainly probably had discussions around this and had personal experiences or experiences when you roll out projects, but really striving to dispel concerns or misconceptions of just gentrification and displacement where there is investment. What we see a lot of times and what's existing is that there's efforts being made to invest in infrastructure in certain neighborhoods that have been historically disinvested in. And then there's a strong concern that comes from the residents as to whether this is going to displace them or lead to potential gentrification in their area. And I think the key piece of it is that working with the neighbors is to certainly so that they understand that this is infrastructure improvement. This is something that is being done so that they have the same thing that everybody else is getting, right? It's an opportunity to improve an area and make it safer, and address issues such as safety and health and crime, as I mentioned prior. These conversations are currently occurring. There's a number of projects that the city of Tucson is engaging in that these issues have come up. And I think one of the biggest pieces when I say effective community engagement is when you approach a community, as you certainly approach that community, not coming in saying you know best, but coming to a community and listening is your first step, and working with that community and building that trust with that community. If you're planning on doing a project, establish that trust well in advance with that community, so that there's an equal exchange in communication. Communication runs, two ways. And I think also a big piece of this too is that with no matter how much data you come with, and no matter how much of a picture you paint with that data, it's also important to listen to that community and understand what their perspective is and what they feel is important. Because sometimes the data is not going to tell you that. It's not going to tell you what that qualitative information is, which is really key. And so that's really a big piece of when it comes to equity and community engagement, is that you're understanding and cognizant of all those components. That concludes our presentation. This is our contact information where you can reach us at. Should you feel free to reach out, want to reach us or have any questions, or certainly want to utilize our office as a potential resource. I think, I don't know if we have much time we have, but certainly would like to open the floor for any questions you might have of Laura and myself. And thank you again for the opportunity to come out and present to you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we have at least 10 minutes. So any questions or comments? Rhonda.
I don't really have a question per se. Just wanted to thank you for your work in this space and standardizing, making sure that those numbers and the underlying information is accurate. And so I just really applaud the effort, and I'm so grateful to see that that's happening.
Thank you so
much. Is there anything in particular that you, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at our work, but is there anything in particular that you wanted to draw our attention to? I know you talked about how interwoven our work here, getting from place to place is, but is there anything in particular you wanted to?
Yeah, so we've been engaged in some conversations with Patrick already at this point, and I think, you know, there's certainly opportunity to look at some of these pieces again through that cliche of looking things through an equity lens. But a lot of thinking, especially with respect just to the community engagement component of it, I think there's certainly extensive amount of work there, or potentially I shouldn't say it's extensive, but there's opportunity to work there and collaborate in that space. But I have always been impressed by Complete Streets and the work of Complete Streets. I think that really as a resource and a tool, it's one of those tools in the toolbox when it comes to creating an equitable environment for populations in general across, you know, not only just Tucson, but as a whole, as these projects are looked at a national basis. This is something that I feel is very important. It's important work that you guys are striving for, and providing that feedback and that input and looking at those projects, because it really is going to really kind of lift up those populations, those marginalized communities that have not had that resource or that investment in their neighborhoods for decades. And so what better way than to look at these projects and potentially, you know, invest these projects in these neighborhoods and these type of areas. Because again, it's going to get people to feel much more safe. It's going to address sometimes in many cases the crime and other challenges that you have in those neighborhoods. And again, it's going to really implore people to be a bit more healthy, get out and explore the outside, right? And walk around, so, or bike around for that matter.
Excellent. Other questions or comments? Miranda.
Yeah, thanks for coming and thanks for the presentation. We really appreciate it. I was really interested in the equity budget analysis, and I was wondering if there's anything more you can say about that, just like a few like high level items about the things you looked at and how the city's measuring up, because that was like a big topic of discussion amongst a lot of community members this past cycle. And I know there's interest in engaging in that process coming into the new year.
Absolutely. It's a good question. Yeah, certainly as we've looked at the equity budget analysis, I think the key piece of it is we have 8 prompts that we put out to each department. And what's really kind of interesting is to kind of see the different varying levels that each department is coming from when it comes to equity work. In some cases, some are very proactive and have done extensive amount of work in this arena. A case in point would be, like, for instance, housing and community development. They have their own equity plan for that matter that's been developed at this point. So some of them are very much some go-getters. Some of them are just beginning to dabble in this arena and starting to kind of understand what the topics are, right? And trying to get their employees to understand what equity is. I think certainly what we've identified at this point is that no matter which the department is, there certainly is programming that is in place that gets to working with marginalized populations in our community, which is very encouraging. I think the area that we've noticed that some areas struggle more than with others is, for instance, how you utilize data, disaggregated data, in your planning processes and in your budget development. And so I think that's one piece that we'll certainly be able to kind of come to the table with them and work with them in that process and helping to understand how to use that data. And as we have this TEDS tool that's established, it's going to be much more of a better tool for these departments to do that planning and developing these processes. One big piece of it, I think that certainly we're also kind of paying attention to and looking towards is kind of the willingness. And I think the big piece of the willingness to kind of engage around these topics by each department. And so far, I can honestly say that each department within the city of Tucson has been very engaging, has been very receptive to the concepts of equity and see the value and importance of them, which is really encouraging for us. But again, it's a matter of meeting individuals where they're at and then building them up from that level. We don't expect to be everybody to be at the same level. We don't expect all the employees or the departments to be at every same level, but we are going to build them up and provide them those necessary resources to get to an even level.
Other questions or comments? Patrick, any concluding comments that you'd like to share?
Well, I'd just like to thank them for being here. Marshall has a...
Okay, Marshall.
Sorry, I couldn't get to the button quick enough. I know I was looking through the presentation and maybe you mentioned it, but you said you did the equity analysis for the budgets for fiscal year 2022 and 23. Were those released to the public? Is there any way we can review that at 23 one?
So that has not been released to the public yet, primarily because we're still going through the process of just starting to analyze it. Unfortunately, it's just Laura and myself that are kind of holding down the ship at this point okay. In the office. Our chief equity officer is away on maternity. But as soon as she gets back into the mix with our office work, certainly we'll be working on those analyses. And then we hope to actually share that with department leadership by the fall is what we're aiming to do, is actually sharing that with department leadership, at which point, you know, we'll see about making that available for transparency purposes.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Okay, Patrick, what were you going to say?
No, I'm just appreciate them being here and giving us an overview of what's happening in the work of the department. I'm particularly excited to see some of the work they come up with the data tools. I think that'll be extremely valuable to what we're doing and what this committee is doing. As you noted, we have our Move Tucson kind of vulnerability index, but that is based on now 4 or 5 year old data. We don't have the resources to continue to maintain that. So something that is unified in the city and is continuously updated, I think would be extremely valuable as we bring 411 forward. So we're really excited to have that and have this team committed to it. So this is, a great opportunity for collaboration.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you both so much. Really great work and very clear.
All right, now thank you all for giving the opportunity.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Okay, next item is Prop 411 funding request, Limberlost. Patrick, this is going to be a decision item, so pay attention. And Patrick, go ahead.
And is that showing up for everybody?
Yeah, except it's not in presentation mode, but yes.
I'm new to the one screen thing here, so, or the two screens. Still no? I'm just going to run with it. I'm not going to futz around with the presentation. Hopefully everybody can see it clearly. If you have any questions, we'll make that work. You'll just get a little sneak peek of what's coming up next, apparently. So we are seeking funding authorization for an extension of the already approved Limberlost project. There's an opportunity that's come along that would make sense for us to basically extend what was previously approved in the first 5-year program to another half mile from Stone to First Avenue. So I'm provide a bit of an update about, you know, what the project is, why we're looking to advance it now as this opportunity has presented itself, how it aligns with the CSCC priorities and the Move Tucson priorities, and how it would affect our funding for the tentative 5-year program, which we're revisiting. And some of this might look a little familiar, but I think the way the reception of the presentation we had last month about how Kaimi Sadora was presented, it sounded like that went over very positively. So we're really trying to adhere to a similar template and format for feedback and discussion. So really what we're looking to do with this extension would be to improve street lighting as a means of improving safety for all users on the corridor, making it easier for people walking and biking and across busy streets, particularly access to Limberlost Family Park, and also to provide bikeway connectivity and fully accessible sidewalks where they don't currently exist as an extension of the existing project. So as I mentioned, we had previously through the committee approved funding for the Limberlost project from Fairview to Stone, which is the solid blue line here. We had anticipated then advancing the first to Stone corridor in a subsequent year, probably 25 or 2026 as funding came available. What has happened is the funding has actually been made available sooner because there's some neighborhood paving work happening in the adjacent neighborhood. So it really provides an opportunity. It makes sense for us at this point to just extend the project and design it as a singular corridor all the way from Fairview to First Avenue.
Patrick,
segment. Yep.
Could you try to make the slideshow work? Because we're still on the cover slide.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What if I just do it this way?
That's fine. You can also at least scoot your little your slide menu over on the left. Or, yeah, make it a little bigger. You can't, that thing won't make full screen. It's weird. Anyway.
I'm sure there's a way to do it, but unfortunately,
it's the next one right there.
So, yeah.
That doesn't do it? Alas. Well, at least you found another way to advance your slides.
Yeah, we'll make it work.
Okay.
I'll do it in a PDF next time. I think that'll work better. This two computer thing. Anyway, so, okay. Well, now that we've got visuals on it, this extent in the solid blue line has already been approved. It's the dash line that we're seeking funding for tonight. And then again, just zooming in a little more on the screen, you can see that we have funding authorized for the extent from Fairview to Stone. And a couple different things going on in here. This section is actually a 5-lane segment with about 7,600 vehicles per day. So we are going to evaluate the potential of doing a road diet on from Oracle to Stone. We'll do the traffic evaluation, see the impacts. It should be pretty straightforward given the traffic volumes we're looking at. It's not one of those that are kind of on the cusp at 16, 17,000 vehicles per day. The Fairview to Oracle section actually overlaps with a Prop 407 bike boulevard, but given the traffic volumes there and the way that that street operates, it doesn't make sense to really pursue a bike boulevard type treatment with the shared lane markings and the traffic calming. We probably need dedicated bike lanes because you're at 6 or 7,000 vehicles per day. So we can incorporate that into this project to provide that, as well as providing the continuous lighting, ADA accessible sidewalks, other safety improvements. And then finally, we can pull in this final segment from Stone to First to give us that full 1.5-mile corridor that we can design as a single project. This is a Tier 2 Move Tucson project. It's kind of the middle segment of that identified corridor. We didn't include this Fairview to Oracle because, as I mentioned, it was a 407 project. But for project execution, it makes sense to align it as a single. This is the segment we're looking at with the intention of ultimately taking it all the way to Campbell. That still is in an out year of Proposition 411, but it's going to be a bit down the road. We don't have the funding to take it all the way to Campbell just yet, but we can make that next gap closure to First. And as I mentioned, this is what we're seeing in Prop 411. This has already been authorized and approved. With the IOAC's approval of the neighborhoods, we've kind of created this gap for us here on Limberlost specifically between First and Stone. Limberlost is a funny one too, and it's kind of a corridor that's fallen through the cracks because we technically have funding for the collector streets and the neighborhood streets. The collector program is what was authorized separately. Technically, Limberlost is a neighborhood street, so it's not eligible for funding under the collector program, although it operates like a collector street, 6,000 vehicles per day, signalized, you know, traffic, lane lines, the whole thing. So it's just a matter of kind of a funding decision and a policy decision. So as we go out and do these neighborhoods, we can include this stretch as part of that project because it is technically a 411 neighborhood safety program, although we are pursuing it and designing it and delivering it like we would one of our layered projects under the collector program. So what we're looking at for this section in particular specifically is what we currently have is about 40 feet from curb face to curb face. We have three lanes, two through lanes and a center turn lane. pretty much continuous sidewalks, although there are some cross sloping issues at the driveways. So that would need to be addressed, some curb ramp problems, and no bike lanes. So what we would be proposing would be to carry that kind of traffic analysis evaluation that we'd be doing on the 5-lane section through to this section and evaluating the opportunity or potential of eliminating that center turn lane to bring in enhanced or protected bike lanes, street lighting, pedestrian accessibility upgrades, as well as repaving the roadway through Proposition 411. I don't think we're prepared to commit at this point to kind of the protected bike lanes. That's really going to be based on the community outreach, what we hear from the public, as well as the evaluation that we do of the both travel and safety impacts of removing the center turn lane. Just for context, we're also going to be doing the same evaluation because we have the same cross section from Fairview to Oracle on the further east western extent of this project. But if we're able to deliver that, then we could feasibly have a fully protected or enhanced bike lane all the way from Fairview to First Avenue at that point. So what has already been approved is what's on this top line here. So we're looking at about roughly $2 million. We would then be adding another $1 million for that additional half mile of the corridor, bringing the total project commitment through the Prop 411 safety element to just over just about $3 million. That's complementary. I don't have the pavement numbers. I think we need to make a determination on the appropriate pavement treatment that will be part of this project. That's going to be coming out of the other side of the 411 budget. It's not shown on the screen, but this is what we'd be looking at committing out of the safety component. And you can see it's the sidewalk elements, the bike elements, the safety elements. The safety is going to be primarily for street crossings and lighting. As you notice, there is no street lighting currently for most of Limberlost. The bike network enhancements are kind of reserving that, assuming that the removal of the center turn lane would be a feasible approach, and then we could install protected, fully protected bike lanes for that extent. If that proves not to be the case, we'll reevaluate. We can redistribute that funding at that, you know, based on that determination. And then the sidewalk money is actually a fairly small amount as opposed to the other parts of the project. We have actual gaps in sidewalks, and it's just for really cleanup of the ramps and the driveway crossings. So the reason really we'd be looking to get this approval now is because it provides an opportunity to really lump this into a single corridor project with the remainder of the Limberlost project and advance it all the way to First Avenue, which is then actually going to allow us to connect in with the future First Avenue projects. It can also be complementary and help us kind of deploy as we look at that neighborhood paving work that is on either side of the corridor. But really the driver of this is truly the extension of that. We're looking to get a firm under contract, and we'd like to identify the project limits all the way to first so we can get the project moving. From a safety perspective, there were 90 crashes on this corridor, including 6 severe crashes and 1 fatal crash since in the period of 2017 to 2021. Now, most of this is really concentrated at the intersections of Stone and First Avenue in particular. But there is a crash pattern that shows us that we have a clustering of crashes right at the access point to the park, the Limberlost Family Park or Don Humboldt Park at 4th Avenue. One of the things we'll be looking at this project would be an enhanced crossing at that location potentially, as well as improved lighting. From an equity perspective, the entire Limberlost project that we're looking at from First all the way to Fairview is within the higher or the kind of the second highest quartile of the equity areas as assessed by Move Tucson. It's really on the border from the north to the south, so it's kind of skirting that line. Based on what we just heard, you see that there are different definitions of this, but the definition that we are using for Move Tucson, it is within a higher need equity area, although not at the highest need. The reason we're looking at potentially removing the center turn lane is Limberlost was also identified as a bike priority street in Move Tucson. And these were corridors that we saw as opportunities where we could reallocate space within the right of way to really prioritize low stress, comfortable bike travel on kind of some of our lower volume collector network.
And this was one that really rose to the top as a potential candidate. So that's why we're kind of pursuing that reallocation of space in the roadway. The darker blue here is our project area of concern. This is what was approved. This is the bike boulevard. And then it connects into Fairview, which is a future potentially protected bike lane. And then speaking of the connections, this is how this aligns with a number of other projects that are coming online or are already in line in this general vicinity. So again, this is our project area. It's this small piece within the broader Limberlost project. As I mentioned, we have the 407 funded bike boulevard, which actually goes beyond Fairview. We have the approved Limberlost project, and actually, oh, that's embarrassing. We're just going to move this over here. We're planning on the fly, folks. So that's where that goes. The Limberlost project will actually connect into a 407 protected bike boulevard or bike lane on Fairview that goes to Prince. A future project that we could be looking at would be to extend that all the way back up to the Limberlost project. So essentially, Limberlost could potentially provide those protected bike lanes, which would connect then into the Fairview protected bike lanes, which would get you all the way south to Grant Road and the new casino that's going in there, as well as an overpass to the Loop. It is also going to intersect with the First Avenue project, where we're going to be looking at making major pedestrian and bicycle enhancements, as well as significant improvements to the intersection of Limberlost and First. That would be potentially a candidate for a protected intersection. And then finally, in the future, we are looking to extend it all the way to Campbell Avenue, which would also get you a connection to Mountain Avenue and onwards to the Loop, for example, as well as Loop connections on First Avenue. And there's a major commercial area in this section. There's also the Limberlost Family Park, which is important. A lot of the community members here are looking for those safer crossing opportunities to get to the park. And we can have full connectivity between the Trader Joe's and the Sprouts. And I think that is enough of a selling point for this project. Finally, in terms of the impact, there is no impact on the five-year plan. It's just advancing a project earlier. It had already been identified. We had already budgeted for it. We're just looking for that approval to advance it prior to initially anticipated. And that's kind of where we're at. And I'm happy to take any questions. I apologize for the presentation challenges.
Questions? Thoughts? Sophia.
I just put it in the chat, but the first question I think you just answered, where the project has been selected, we're just moving it up. And then my other question was, are the other streets like that Limberlost segment defined as collector streets elsewhere in the city? You know, I think of Silver Lake, and that's just in trying to be creative and resourceful. Obviously, I'm biased with, you know, keeping as much funding for with the 20% versus generally the 80%.
Yeah, so Limberlost, so there are other corridors that operate like Limberlost that are defined as collector streets. Collectors are typically roadways that have about 2,500 to about 18,000 vehicles per day is kind of the measure. So, you know, Glen, 6th Ave, Roger, just south of Limberlost, I believe, is a collector. This one actually was just removed as a policy decision, but operates like a collector. That said, regardless if it's a collector or a local street, neither of that funding is going to hit the 20% safety element. That's either going to be coming out of the mayor and council dedicated collector street program, which is hitting the general fund as well as the state gas tax money, or it's going to be coming out of the 411 paving fund, which is the 80% piece of the plan. In either case, we would be offering up the 20% complimentary improvements for the sidewalks, the lighting, and the safety enhancements in the bikeways. If the full list of what is a collector can be found in the City of Tucson's Major Streets and Routes Plan. And we'll get into that, but I'd be happy to share that location with you. And the other was, in terms of the funding, yeah, so it wasn't fully approved by the CSCC. It had been reviewed. It had been vetted by the subcommittee in more detail, the tentative five-year program, but nothing had been approved yet, which is why we're seeking approval for advancing these funds this evening to kind of formalize that, to extend that project. We still need to come back for that full five-year plan approval.
Okay. Ruth and then Miranda.
Yeah, I'm a bit confused at the configuration of the mile and a half roadway. Is it part of its three lanes and part of its five lanes?
That's correct. So between Oracle and Stone, it is five lanes. And I think that was widened as probably a development agreement of a lot of the commercial around here. And then on either side of that, it drops to three lanes.
So what's the plan to get the bike lanes in? To take out the middle, the turn lane?
Exactly. So the two options would be, we have 40 feet. So option A would be to remove the center turn lane, and you could have extra wide bike lanes in that case, probably 8 feet with a protected element. Option B, if that is not feasible for one reason or another, we could technically do three 10-foot lanes with 5-foot bike lanes. That is the less than ideal choice, but we would still be able to squeeze the bike lanes in that case.
So the configuration after the money is spent would be similar through the whole segment. There will be a center lane, or there won't be a center lane.
We would retain the center lane on the current five lane.
Okay.
So it would be two lanes. Can you see my cursor? Am I sharing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Two lanes in this section with an enhanced bike lane. Three lanes in this section with a protected bike lane. Two lanes in this section with protected bike lane, and then these would retain their current two lane configuration.
Because my concern would be taking out that center lane, people are going to try to go around a car making a left turn, and they're going to go into the bike lane, and they're not going to look when they go into the bike lane to see if there's a biker coming along in the bike lane. So I would be concerned that you're not putting in protected lanes when you take out that center turn lane.
Yeah. So if we take out the center turn lane, that will give us the space to, that's a great observation. That will give us the space to do the protected bike lane.
Do you have the money?
Yes, the money is built into this proposal.
Okay.
So that's kind of contingent upon the removal of the center turn lane, which then would allow us to install the protected bike lane for the exact reason that you're saying.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Great clarification.
Miranda?
Yeah, I'm glad to know that about the bike lanes too. I'm really interested in if you're able to share anything else about the evaluation, like what kinds of things are going to be looked at, who's going to do it, things like that.
Yeah.
Just like what's going to inform this project, basically.
Yeah, so that's yet to be determined. We're currently in negotiations with a consultant team potentially to come on board, and we kind of would like to have certainty on the project limits before we finalize that. But we would be looking at basically, are there going to be any safety impacts of removing the center turn lane? There's a couple of different ways we can approach that, but there is a safety benefit for having a center turn lane in an urban environment. You remove less rear end crashes, essentially. So is that offset by the benefits of additional traffic calming, lighting, and putting in dedicated bike lanes? So that would be part of that evaluation, because there's going to be a safety benefit of the bike lanes for bicyclists. We just saw a study recently which showed actually going from a standard bike lane to a protected bike lane resulted in a couple of case studies in about a 50% reduction in bicycle crashes, which was huge. So that would be part of that. We would also look at if there would be any kind of delay impacts. So it'd be a safety and a delay consideration. And then also the evaluation, I don't think it would be a data analysis, but knowing that the benefits of being able to accommodate more users and also that enhanced bikeway. One of the things we are also looking at, and it would be dependent on danger, drainage, would potentially be installing a raised crosswalk to Limberlost Family Park. So that would have the traffic calming benefit as well as the ADA benefit of having that level crossing. But That's not going to be dependent on the removing the center turn lane, but it's going to have a big safety impact and slow traffic.
Riley.
All right, thanks. Thanks, Patrick. Is there any way to quantify like how much we save when there's like a project like this on Limberlost and then we add a half mile or whatever to it? Like how much as a city we're saving, you know, by doing it at the same time, because that's come up before as one of the benefits.
That's a good question. I don't have the answer to that tonight. I think some of the benefit too would be just having more uniformity and being able to get it done.
So I agree with that for sure. I just wonder if, you know, having everybody out there, like if it'll happen at the same time, and if, it'd be great to say, it'd be great to show if that happens, like, we know we actually save money that then can be used for another project by combining these when they're already out there. So I don't know how hard that is to figure out, but that would be great information.
That's a great question. We've kind of been operating just as a, you know, kind of a professional assumption. And the folks always say, you know, the more you're doing it a single time, you're going to get this the cost savings of scale. I don't know the specifics of how we would quantify that, but I could talk to some of the folks on the engineering side of the house to see if they have any thoughts on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Great question.
Before Marshall, Gracia is asking what TWLTL stands for.
Two-way left turn lane.
Oh, so simple.
Too long to put on it's a lot of words to put on a slide.
great question. Right. Marshall?
Thanks. So I was looking on the map a little bit. So that part from Mountain to Campbell, that looks like it already has a bike lane. So essentially this will have bike lanes if we approve this all the way from Campbell to eventually Fairview, right?
That's correct. And actually the bike boulevard would then take it all the way to Flowing Wells.
Okay.
As that separate project into the county.
And the repaving work on this extension, would that include like milling it down and then putting new asphalt down? Is that the extent of the repaving?
That's what we're looking at. The section particularly around Limberlost and Oracle is very rough near the Lowe's. So that's probably going to need a higher level of treatment. But we haven't determined the appropriate pavement treatment at this time. I think that will be part of this evaluation. Given that it is under the neighborhood side of the 411 program versus the collector program, we're probably a little bit more constrained in the type of pavement work we can do. So that's something to keep in mind. And that, I think, go ahead.
I was just acknowledging it.
Yeah. But I think we're looking at a mill and overlay as opposed to what we're doing on Bilby, which is going to be like a full depth reconstruction.
Okay. And I just have one more question. There was a lot at First Street on the south side. Did you know how that was zoned? Is that commercial residential?
Which one? Sorry.
There's a empty lot at the south. It's the southwest corner at First and Limberlost.
I don't know. I could probably dig into that real quick, but I would, if it's at the intersection, most of that is commercial, but there are some apartments, so it's hard to say.
Okay.
It would be on that Tucson, but I'm assuming commercial.
I didn't know that. Does that have any effect on whether you decide to take away the center turn lane? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be seeing traffic generators that would be significant enough to really impact that unless it's very localized.
Okay. Thank you.
Jennifer.
Hi, I just wanted to make a general comment. I biked that section all the way from Mountain all the way to Oracle frequently, and I would comment that maybe protected bike lane would be the best. What's scary about that is the only part of that that's really scary is where it is the two lanes and the dedicated turn lane. If somebody decides they want to go past you, even though you're on the side, they will go into the middle turn lane and not necessarily look and see what's going on there. And then, Patrick, aren't there speed tables in front of the park?
I believe there are. We're looking to bring in more and make that a raised crosswalk.
Yeah, there's some speed tables there. And then the other part of that one, once you cross over where it's the four lanes, the lanes aren't really defined. So people don't really use them as lanes. I don't know if that makes sense, but I've noticed that in a car and also in a bike. So they're back and forth, kind of like parts of Silver Lake are. So just, and that is commercial on the corner there, Marshall. I want to tell you that because I bike that quite often. But anyway, I just want to make a comment on that. So, I mean, it's the perfect street for bicycle commuting, to go shopping, things like that. And I've noticed when I'm out, even in my car, I haven't been on my bike because it's been too hot, but that people are walking along there and also on their bikes on the sidewalks. And that's all I wanted to say.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer.
Okay, so given the time, let's check in. Patrick, why don't you frame up what the decision is exactly? And then you all can, if you don't have enough information and need longer to work on this, you can request that. If you feel like you are kind of clear on how you would support or not support this, then we'll find out that as well. Miranda, were you raising, or Riley, were you raising your hand? No. Okay. Maybe there's a fly. Okay. So, Patrick?
Yeah. So we're seeking basically approval from the Complete Streets Coordinating Council to extend the project limits from Stone Avenue to First Avenue so that we can do the entire Fairview to Stone as a single corridor project. And that would be about an additional $1 million in funds.
Okay, so the first question for all of you is, do any of you have concerns that and you wouldn't want to support that, or additional questions, cautions, any of that? Let's hear.
I just have one more question. What's the timeline?
So in terms of where we are, it is our preliminary project, or kind of initial project list. With this authorization, we're ready to get a consultant on board, and we're probably looking at 18 months to 2 years of a design process, construction in 25.
A completion in 25?
Probably about a year of construction.
Okay.
But these elements that you've been discussing are part of the design process and further input into this, right, Patrick?
Yeah, so this is really a funding authorization to begin the design process, knowing that we'll have the construction money in place. So we'll certainly be committed to bringing the project back to the CSCC as we get into some of those more detailed design decisions. You know, that's why we're not going to commit right now to removing the center turn lane or putting in the protected bike lane. I think that's our target and that's our goal, but we will also bring that back to a decision of the CSCC.
Okay, great. Miranda, then Sophia.
So it's kind of related to something Sophia put in the chat, but I'm curious to know, and I'm glad to hear like assurance that we'll be a part of the process as things like move forward, because I think that there's some concern about approving a project that sounds really good and then being told later that the evaluation or the analysis didn't support like the interventions that we were excited about. And so I'm curious, like, to what extent we can have an assurance that the evaluation won't have an outcome where they say, oh, you know, yes, it would have these safety benefits, but we've actually determined that the impacts to, you know, cars being able to travel outweighs that, you know, like what's our leverage, I guess?
Mm. That's a great question. So it's a tricky one, because I think we're hesitant to kind of predetermine a design on the project until we have all of the information, but we're not going to do the collection and kind of the outreach until we have a funding authorization on the project. I guess one option, but I'm not sure how useful it would be. So you clearly put me on the spot here. is you could authorize funding for the design and then contingent upon the outcomes, authorize the funding as a second tier for construction. That said, I think the road repaving is going to be going ahead. That's going to be funded under the 80% of the program. The other elements could be funded separately. So it would be funding for the sidewalks, the lighting, those things could happen as well. So I guess it would be, yeah, I mean, that would be part of the leverage, but I think some of what would be getting withheld would also be beneficial to the community. You also have a lot of authority over the review. There's not going to be a citizens committee. You will be serving as the citizens committee and the design review committee of this process. And personally, I think what we've looked at and evaluated, the traffic volumes are much lower here than they are on 5th 6. And I think the pushback and challenges with doing that road diet on that 5-lane section in particular are going to be much lower. And honestly, the volumes mirror what we're seeing on Bilby with fewer driveways. And we are comfortable moving forward with a center turn lane removal on Bilby right now. And that's what we'll be bringing to the public in August. We're at both corridors are about 6,000 or 7,000 vehicles per day. It's not an assurance, but I can tell you that's where we are. We've had comfort from that internally on the analysis, and we're looking to mirror the analysis we did on Bilby on Limberlost to justify the removal of the center turn lane. And that information is public and available. I believe I've shared it out, but if you go to the Bilby website, you can see the evaluation we did on that to justify the removal of the center turn lane if you want an example.
Sophia.
Great question.
Yeah, I don't really feel ready to vote on this today. And it's also like, Patrick, you've been answering so many questions well. But it just isn't, like, it's still not really clear to me why it's not coming from the 80% versus the 20%. It's not clear to me why this wasn't initially chosen with the first 5 years for the funding when we put those projects together. So I don't know if it's just time processing the answers you've already provided. That would be helpful to me personally, or, you know, how else the council is feeling.
Yeah, and if I may answer those, or if you'd want the other council members to speak up, I can go either way on that.
Well, why don't you answer those, and then let's go to other council members. And if you're feeling similarly, if so, what additional information would be helpful, or if you do feel ready.
Yeah. So with regard to the 80 versus the 20%, so the 80% is paying for the paving work, which is the requirement of that portion of the Proposition 411. We're treating this like a layering project. Sidewalks, lighting, and bike lanes beyond just striping can't be paid for under the 80%. That is only for paving. And this just happens to be a local street, so it's getting paid for out of the 411 paving program. Otherwise, it would have been paid out of the collector program, but the same restriction would apply. The collector program only can pay for asphalt. Any of the complementary work, which would include the sidewalks, the ADA work, the lighting, and the bike lanes, are going to be paid for out of the 20% fund. The reason we didn't advance this earlier is because we thought that it was outside of our funding constraint for year one. So we limited that project to the Stone Avenue. Given that the neighborhood paving work that is adjacent to this segment is moving forward and we have this opportunity to tie it to the what was already approved, we can actually authorize this funding sooner. It was just sitting in the tentative five-year program out in 2026. We're seeking to advance it in 2023. So it's just moving the project forward within that constraint and that timing. And was there another question you had? Hopefully that clarified it.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Okay, so let's just get a sense. How many of you, raise your hand if you're a member, or put a thumb up or some indication if your screen is off, that if you feel ready to make a decision on this, to go for consensus? Rhonda, Miranda, Charlie, Riley, Ruth, Catherine. Okay. And Liz. So how many of you, I'm that you're not all in the right cluster of my screen. How many of you feel like you need more information and you'd like to, or more thinking time and you'd like to postpone till next meeting? Sophia. And do you need more information or just more time to process what has been shared?
Just more time.
Just more time. And Miranda says, I'm ready to vote, but happy to hold off until next meeting. Patrick? Marshall? Did you want to say something or are you feeling?
One more question about the enhanced bike lanes. Okay. Would it be done with the section, with the section that's already been approved? Will those two be aligned? So we won't have one, you know, enhanced bike lane without the other. Would that kind of be the idea?
Yeah, so we would, with this, we would be able to provide a continuous, ideally protected, otherwise buffered bike lane all the way from Fairview to First Avenue.
So we wouldn't do part of it and not do the other.
Exactly. I mean, if we delayed this, we would still do it. We would just do it to Stone.
Okay. Because it wouldn't make much sense for like one, for a group to say, we don't improve, you know, approve enhanced bike lane for the half mile section while approving it for the mile section. So I just wanted to see if it's going to be made, the decision is going to be made to apply to the whole route. So thank you.
Yep. So we're going to design it as a singular corridor and look to match up.
Okay.
And have that continuity.
Thank you.
Jennifer.
I say also just to go for it, put the neighborhood out of its misery. I'm saying that as a Ward 3 representative. Just it needs to be done. And it's a perfect thing. It's what we're about. That street is calm. It would just make it calmer. But if we need to wait for the next meeting, we can wait. But I'm just voting yes today.
Rhonda?
Well, I was just going to echo that I feel like this project is, you know, in the interest of continuity and improving wellness and safety and allowing people easy access to the park and all of those reasons, I feel like I would be willing to support it. But I also understand if, you know, I would like everyone to be happy and feeling like they have their questions answered. So I'm ready if other people are.
So if it's helpful, I think the consequences of delaying a month aren't going to be catastrophic to the project. Essentially, what we'll do is we'll just hold off on getting the contract in place with the consultant to begin the analysis. We can start that next month. We're not going to advance the Stone to Fairview until we have clarity on this section. So we are still, the intention would be to continue to advance it as a singular project. If we came back next month and then you ultimately withheld approval, we would advance then just the Stone to Fairview section and look for opportunities, maybe as it was aligned in the original plan in 2026, 2027 to cover the Stone to First Avenue section. But yeah, not catastrophic to our timeline. If we come back in August for approval, we'll just withhold, getting the firm under contract.
Ruth?
I just wanted to clarify, don't we usually take July off?
We can if you want to, but...
You were planning on a meeting next month?
I was, unless there's open rebellion, and then we will cancel it.
No, that's okay.
There's a couple of items we wanted to talk about at the next meeting, but again, we can chat at the end if you guys want to cancel that one and kick it August.
Okay, any other thoughts about... So it seems like you're saying most people are probably ready, but... maybe delaying is a good idea. Patrick has also you've suggested one option is to say you would approve the analysis, but contingent on that is the approval of the second chunk of money. Maybe you can rephrase that.
Yeah, it would be an authorization of design funds, and then contingent upon that authorization of construction. It's not real. I would say that. I think that's some leverage. I'm not sure that would be ideal for us from a project delivery standpoint. We do like to, when we initiate projects, when we go to the community, like to have certainty that we're able to deliver those projects as opposed to doing unfunded design and unfunded community outreach.
Right. Okay, and just circle back. Sophia, are you still feeling like it would be good to be able to post one by month?
Yeah, I'm not ready to vote like right now in this next 10 seconds.
Okay, so is that good, Patrick? This will be delayed till July or potentially not July if you guys decide you don't want to meet in July.
If we do delay, I would prefer to go to July if we don't want to delay it too much. I'm not trying to leverage into a decision today, but I don't want to kick the project too far down the road. If we could come back in the next month, maybe we could look at taking August off.
And let's just say right now, how many of you would not be able to make the July meeting, which is the... July 26th. Can you raise your hand if you think you're not going to make it? So it looks like most of you are able to. So we would presume that we would move forward. Okay. All right. So, and if you do think you want any additional information about this project, let Patrick know so that he can get it to you in advance and you can have thought about it and then be ready for.
Yeah.
Consensus.
We just want to check this. So the committee is comfortable delaying this until next month?
There's nods. I don't think it's an actual consensus decision for the delaying, right? But if we do not have consensus to move forward on the decision.
Okay.
So that defaults to delaying the decision. Okay, let's move on to the next topic.
Before we find out, just offer, okay, if anybody has any additional questions, feel free to reach out. That would make that you feel you need more information for this decision.
Yeah. And Rhonda is saying, and Patrick, if you do send any additional information, is there a way to copy the rest of us so that there aren't any surprises next month? So make sure you share it with everybody if you send out anything.
That's a great thought. Anything that goes out, I will send to the entire committee.
Yeah, perfect. Okay. All right, the next topic is public engagement plan for Prop 411 Neighborhood Safety Program. Gabriela, and your time has been a little shortchanged, so okay. I have no idea how long it'll take you.
How much time do I have then?
Well, if we do the CSC hub short, well, that's in theory you have till 7:15.
Okay.
Just 25 minutes and then maybe a little bit. Add in a little bit of question time within that.
Okay. Thanks, Tommy. All right, I'm going to share my screen. Okay, can everyone see that? All right, so I think I've met all of you virtually at the March meeting. My sense of time is a little warped, but for those of you that I haven't met, I'm Gabriela Barillas-Longoria. I'm the Livability Project Manager. I work with Patrick on his team. And this is one of the programs that I'm managing. It's the Tucson Deliver Safe Streets mini grant program for traffic calming. So as promised, a lot of the members of the council were interested in an update on the community engagement plan. So that is all we are focusing the update on this month. And I'll end the slides for future agenda items if you want food for thought on other updates with the program. Okay, so the objective is to present on the community engagement plan and then I'm aiming to leave about 10-15 minutes of discussion to get your input. The purpose of this plan, which we sent out late last night, or at the end of the day, so don't expect everybody to have read it, but I have deconstructed the plan into this slideshow. But the purpose is to develop a strategy for engaging the community to participate and inform them about the program. So I'm just really parsed it out and like how we're going to do this. And that includes communicating how staff like myself will introduce the program to the public, specifically in high need areas throughout the city. Just as a reminder, it's been a minute about what this program is. I wanted to just bring us back to the vision. of the mini grant program, which is to establish an inclusive community-led process to deliver neighborhood safety improvements across the city. And we're prioritizing under-resourced neighborhoods who cannot otherwise fund their own traffic calming projects through existing programs such as the Neighborhood Traffic Management Program, or NTMP. And I did share this slide before, but is coming back to it to show like how this plan addresses the, or fits into the whole framework. Equity is being applied in four ways. The first is through community engagement and how we are targeting outreach to communities of interest or higher need. Then the scoring, which we will talk about in a future meeting, the fact that it is community led rather than planners and engineers coming up with these projects on our own, and the funding. So again, we're establishing a floor where at least 60% of the funds are going to be allocated to areas that are classified as highest and higher according to the equity index from Move Tucson. And we're also, so there's the floor, and then in terms of the scorecard, we also want to allocate about 50% to equity metrics. Just a refresher on the community engagement-based equity metric. This is the project implementation will include the public engagement strategy that meets people where they are, and including in-person outreach at community events, web tools, and engaging community-based organizations. So a lot of what we heard in Javier and Laura's presentation earlier. A draft timeline for you all. So program development began the beginning of this year. So it's been really taking our time and being thoughtful about this. And we hope to have all the materials approved by your August meeting. And that's, I said August because I don't know if you all will meet quorum in July. So we do have that contingency in place. And the community engagement is, it's actually already started with the one-on-one meetings, but it will really kick off once the weather gets better and it's not 110 degrees outside. And that will continue through the fall. And we're still on target for a program launch the first week of September. Then that means the pilot, the design, the awards would go out, we're guessing like January, and the design would begin shortly thereafter. So early 2024, followed by construction. And there's one more arrow after that, which would be the evaluation after each year. Strategies for inclusive engagement. These are a few that have been taken into account for this plan. So we're identifying and prioritizing relationship building, valuing community expertise, just as we do with our consultants. So really bringing in folks that are already doing this work and bringing them in early and having them be part of the team. Starting early with alternative methods of engagement, maintaining open communication channels, making sure like as myself as a project manager that I have like a, you know, open door policy and folks can easily reach me and by various methods, and I will do my best to keep everyone posted as well. And then removing barriers and creating a welcoming experience. So I want those that do interface with this program to have had a good experience and for it to not be very cumbersome. And lastly, partnering with community-based organizations and agencies. We know that the best city initiatives are those where we really lean on other groups that are doing the work exclusively. Planning stage, so these are some questions that we'll be asking in the application and the one-on-ones. What needs to be improved? What needs do you have? What's feasible with our available funding? And having that represented and with visuals as well. And what's working, what's not working in terms of existing infrastructure, for example. How do you get around your neighborhood and what kind of traffic calming would make sense in your neighborhood? We know that just because curb extensions quick build curb extensions work in one neighborhood, it doesn't mean another neighborhood's going to like it or want it. And how are we doing this? How are we prioritizing under-resourced neighborhoods? Well, one, the primary data source we're using is the Move Tucson Equity Index. We are also going to be prioritizing our in-person events using that data. So in areas where we haven't typically heard from folks, where they are have more challenges engaging, so we want to meet them where they're at. And then we will, of course, do citywide outreach through more traditional mediums such as press releases and emails, newsletters, all of that. So we'll do that through one-on-one discussions with community leaders, participating in existing in-person community events rather than creating our own and asking them to come to another meeting. And then piggybacking or partnering with people that are already doing barrio walks, cafecitos, and pop-ups, such as the Ward 1 office. Neighborhood meetings, we definitely want to disseminate information about the program through existing meetings, encouraging neighborhoods to apply that way through the Neighborhood Nugget, which goes out to all the neighborhoods. Individual newsletters, so just have a picture here of the Garden District. That's one of the ones that I do receive, and flyers. So flyers that can be distributed at community hubs such as libraries. Communications, so these are the broader communications that will go out to everybody, regardless of where they are in terms of need as defined by equity. So news releases, bilingual, of course, posting educational materials and event information on our city social media accounts, asking ward offices to include description about the program and upcoming event information in their communication channels. And then, as I said before, the printed materials, so flyers at the very least. Ward office role, we've already started doing this starting in May with one-on-ones that I have been attending with the director, Transportation Mobility Director Sam Credio, has monthly one-on-ones with each ward office. This has been an agenda item. And it's been interesting. We've gotten different feedback from all different wards. So they were really leaning on them to help inform the development of the program, providing suggestions on what works for their constituents, and promoting it for, via their channels. That's in September, like once the program is live. And then also referring traffic calming requests that maybe they get that are not being sent to TDOT Concerns, for example, our way. One-on-one discussions. I was recently made aware that that is not a commonly used term for everyone. So just to define it, it is a meeting that is a tool to establish, maintain, and grow relationships and organizing based out of organizing principles. Sorry for the dog. And so to decide where we prioritize those one-on-ones, we're going to create a list, which we already have started doing, of community leaders to meet with, to introduce the program, give an opportunity to express their feelings and impressions and discuss ways to get the word out. So not just like this is happening, but what do you think? Like, what can we still modify? Well, before it's everything is final. And then who has strong ties to those folks that might not engage in this program, whether it's mistrust in the city or government, bad experiences. So we really want to lean on the trusted networks. Some of those include Sunnyside Foundation, Fuga, Generacion, Flowers and Bullets, faith-based organizations, which you know, sometimes we overlook, and former and active community ambassadors for various initiatives. I have a slide just on the Ward 1 participatory budgeting, because I think it's really impressive how many people they've engaged and how we can leverage what the efforts that they've done and with this program. So in one of their recent newsletters, they announced that over 1,100 people voted in the first cycle. And one of the 20 recipients of the community-based projects is a Sunnyside Traffic Triangle, which it would be like an eligible project for this program. So I've been talking to our partners at Tucson Clean and Beautiful, who the ward office has already approached to see how they can leverage their funding from their mini grant program. And because I believe that they only got $10,000 out of the Ward 1 participatory budgeting process. And we know that that's not going to get them a big traffic triangle with landscaping and GSI. So the most recent cost estimate that I heard was around $50,000. So then it would be a cost, just as an example, of a cost sharing opportunity. That's about, you know, $10,000 Ward 1 participatory budgeting, and then maybe 50-50 of the remainder with the GSI and this traffic calming program. Also, other alternative approaches for engagement are, I'm talking a lot about Ward 1 because I just had a meeting with them this week. And but we will get ideas from the remaining wards too. But the purpose of these alternative approaches are to not only raise awareness that this even exists. We know we have so many resources, city resources that people don't even know are available to them. So that's one. It's also an opportunity to do a needs assessment, identifying issues and concerns through already existing activities such as Ward 1's, cafecitos, barrio walks, and workshops that they do with Fuga. So that's, here's a flyer of one of the barrio walks. And I was informed that those will kick up, start again in September or October once the weather gets better too. Then we'll do additional pop-ups, not too many, but just whatever we can in other areas as well. So in spaces where a lot of people are gathering, like parks. Community bike rides, here's a picture of a recent one on Mother's Day where my colleague Colin partnered with Fuga, hired them as a consultant of sorts, and got input from the people on the Sunday ride for the West Side bike boulevards. That's an example of something we can do. And I'm going to be meeting with Fuga at the end of July. And then again, barrio walks that are already happening, we can do these it's an opportunity for us to understand better, like, where are the needs, and then tell them, be like, hey, there's actually funding available to address those needs. So oftentimes we do walkability assessments and they sit on a shelf for years until a grant rolls around. So it's a really exciting opportunity to jump on that. Participating in existing workshops, this was a suggestion made by my colleagues at Planning and Development Services and Ward 1, that if there's already a workshop happening, we can jump in and participate and offer information about the program. And then there's going to be a suite of supporting materials. This is one of them. It's a menu of options that will be available in print and online. So it's going to give people an idea of what these things cost. And that way they can make more informed suggestions in their application. So if we're looking at funding projects that are $25,000 to $100,000, maybe that will get them a speed hump and a big traffic triangle. But at the same time, if they don't really know exactly what they need in that application, we're not penalizing folks for that. So that's where our technical assistance will come into play. There'll also be a fact sheet, which Patrick shared with the committee, with the council, and also obviously a website with an interactive map. And it was, I forget who it was, which member, but one of you said that it would be helpful to have an interactive map that shows what the street classifications are. So if we're limiting this mini grant program to local streets, if having the ability for somebody to click on the map and be like, verify that their street is a local street, something like that, and FAQs on the website, and the application will be available in print and online. What's next? Future updates. So next meeting, whether it's July or August, I definitely want to bring you the draft application, a scorecard that the team will use to rate or score the applications, and then an initial project list that we are putting forward that already have agency approvals through the Neighborhood Traffic Mitigation Program. So those would be, I mentioned this last time, but the rationale for that would be to get some projects going while we await the mini grant, the first round of mini grant applications. So I guess we have just a few minutes, maybe 7 minutes for questions from you all. And don't worry about this last one, but I did want to ask about performance measures and evaluation and if you would like to see demographics on the application or not, but we can talk about that next time.
Great, thank you. Questions or comments? Rhonda.
So Gabriella, thank you. That's very comprehensive. It's hard to come up with questions for you. It was so thorough. But I did have one question. You had indicated that that you've done walkability assessments and sometimes these things just sit on a shelf until waiting for funding. If there are neighborhoods that have applied in the past and just haven't gotten funding and come through, is there an outreach to them specifically, or are they just part of the overall like broad awareness program?
Do you mean, well, so since this is a brand new program, do you mean that those that have applied for through the NTMP program, like that have already collected petitions? Is that what you're referring
yeah.
to? Yeah, so we're doing a first pass of those that are awaiting funding. So that means that, let's say your neighborhood went through the trouble of collecting the petitions, you got the required amount, even got the agency approvals, and it's just, you don't have funding. So that's where we can take a portion of the $450,000 per year to go back to those projects starting at 2019, since those petitions expire in 4 years, and saying like to your neighborhood, hey, by the way, there's this new new opportunity, and it would be fairly easy to then apply for the program because you already have a lot of the information. But if not selected for like the initial projects pre the mini grant program, then I think we would probably ask folks to submit that application. It is going to be really easy, but I'm open to ideas.
Thank you.
Yeah. Shirley.
Hey, Gabby. I have two quick questions. One, and pardon me if I missed this, but you said there will be a website, you know, for the public to access all this information. And I'm just wondering, what is the projected timeline for that, like going live?
Yeah, early September.
Early September. And then my other question was, it looked to me from the slides like you, and there was something about coming to already organized neighborhood associations. Is that something that like a neighborhood association could contact you and you would come out to like the local neighborhood association meeting to talk to folks about it? Or are there folks going to be making site visits?
Yeah, good question. It would be more of a request to me to ask if it could be, for example, like on the agenda for a particular neighborhood meeting. It's hard to say like what the demand will be, right? If I get 60 requests, I can't do 60 meetings in a few months, but we'll prioritize them. But at the very least, neighborhoods will be able to include information in their newsletters. But I will be available by phone as well, email. And I do hope to be able to get to as many neighborhoods as we can.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Ruth.
Just a general question. Why isn't signage a traffic calming feature?
What kind of signage are you thinking?
Any kind of speed limit sign, a slow down, children are playing, a welcome to the neighborhood, slow down. I mean, I would think a speed limit sign would be a traffic calming feature.
I would have to ask the traffic engineering as well. But my initial response would be that we're looking at the complete streets guide, design guide, and what's outlined as traffic calming. So speed of course, there is speed mitigation, like you're saying, and actually changing the speed limits that we're already doing with bicycle boulevards. But just the level of analysis and the traffic study that is required to do those is pretty big, right? So for this first year, we don't want to get in over our heads and start, you know, promising that we can do extensive studies like that. But also, well, children at play signs have, according to some traffic engineering literature, have been proven to not be effective. However, the yard signs, we have heard anecdotally from neighbors that those have been working. But I guess a more concrete answer would be that we're focusing on in-street work, so nothing behind the curb. The reason is we get kind of a big bang for your buck when you're changing the geometry of the street. You're really making it so the built environment and the design of the street makes people slow down rather than signage, which sometimes people unfortunately just ignore. But signage does definitely play a critical piece. And I think that the bike boulevard projects really incorporate that well with wayfinding. But those projects are, you know, can be several miles long, where this is more of a block or a couple block scale project.
Okay. Because I know for me, if I see a speed limit sign, I recognize the speed limit. And quite often on stretches, I don't know what the speed limit is because there are no speed limit signs.
Yeah.
So, because like Dodge, I'm driving along Dodge and I had no idea it's 25 miles an hour. And
right.
And so if I see that, I do actually slow down from 30.
So this is focusing on the neighborhood streets. So of course, if there is supposed to be a speed limit sign on like the entrance of the neighborhood and it's missing, that is something our department would replace anyways, regardless of the mini grant program. So that would be, you know, we are required to replace those. So it would be more of a request through TDOT concerns. But for this, what we're funding is projects that are not otherwise, that are cost prohibitive for neighbors.
Okay.
Yeah, good question.
Gracia.
Hi, Gabriela. Thank you for your presentation. I really do appreciate it. Put in the comment section that you said there would be technical assistance offered to the groups applying. I just kind of wanted to see kind of if you can explain it a little bit more. I know just even by talking to folks in the community, you know, in previous roles that I've had, like as a community ambassador, there's people out there and groups who are interested in like lowering, you know, and implementing traffic calming interventions in their neighborhoods. And then just kind of, I'm not knowing which would be the best options. And so I'm thinking this is what the technical assistance would play in, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm also open to your feedback on more concretely what the technical assistance could be like. But what I'm thinking is like one-on-one meetings with groups or specific neighborhoods, especially if they do lack the resources, they are having trouble like submitting the application. But also I'm hoping that by way of designing it, so it's very simple, I want it to be like you just don't necessarily even need to finish high school to be able to complete the application. So it's going to be very simple, just a few questions, a very short narrative. And we're not going, I want to design the scorecard so we're not just awarding like the fanciest proposals. This is, it's just getting like, what's the meat of it? Why do you want this? And then we're also having a lot of supportive materials to hopefully limit the difficulty or mitigate the difficulties that people have. But yeah, I'm really open to anything. So I'm happy to sit down with people in person, help them out, provide like mini workshops. So if any other ideas come up, feel free to send them to Patrick or myself.
No, I think that's great that you provide the technical systems in terms of like the whole application. But I also was thinking like it'd be great to have the department provide feedback to the folks applying, if they're thinking, like, if I guess what I'm thinking is, like, if they are thinking maybe a traffic calming circle might be the most applicable, but maybe the Department of Transportation has more information on that given street and maybe they have a better suggestion, or maybe not necessarily a better suggestion, but something that will give them more bang for their buck.
Sure. Yeah. So that's a good point. We can certainly do that. So what I'm hearing is providing, having opportunity for feedback would be like, and that's what I meant earlier when I said, I don't expect people to always know like what's the best mitigation. So we can certainly build that into the application process where we provide comments and flexibility in terms of like changing the application a little bit. And that will also happen in the design phase. So like, let's say the project is selected, it could change a little bit. And that's where we do the on-site visits with the consultant team, like for the neighborhoods that have been selected. But thank you. I'll make sure to definitely build that in to the process.
Thank you so much, Gabriela. This is really informative and hopefully you got some good questions. Again, for everybody else, get back in touch with her or through Patrick if you have other ideas.
This is a very savvy group. Thank you so much for your thoughtful questions, and I'll be back next time.
Sounds great.
Have a great evening.
You too. Okay, and to wrap up the evening, we have our CSCC hub, and I'll just call on each of you to give an update on if you've met, if there's anything important to share with this group or anything you need to ask of this group. So IOAC, Liz.
Liz had to jump off. I guess I can give that update. I attended the meeting last night, unfortunately. Kind of a momentous meeting. They did approve years 2 through 4 of the neighborhood paving program. So they committed about $210 million, I believe the number was. So now within the next couple of days, we'll have the updated map showing all the neighborhoods that are going to get the repaving treatment under the 80% funds in the next 4 years. So they've approved year one previously. This takes them through years 2, 3, and 4. In a couple of years, then they'll be looking at the next 3 years, essentially, to take us out to the 10. Other than that, they also tentatively approved the next 4 years of the Collector Street program. I think relevant to the discussion we're having tonight, that's kind of central to the work that you all are doing in terms of identifying those layering safety improvement opportunities. So instead of actually committing to that 5 year or that, 4 year now, because they approved the first year, 4 year Collector Street program, their guidance was to actually bring that back to the CSCC in July for your review and opportunities that you see for safety improvements, how it aligns with Move Tucson, and looking for concurrence action recommendation changes. What the decision was made on was strictly on pavement conditions. So the projects are a worst first approach. They took our collector network and they saw which ones had the worst pavement, worked up from the bottom, and identified those as the collector program. We'll bring that to the CSCC in July for review and an opportunity for discussion and maybe a joint decision with the IOAC or your input certainly to that program. As soon as that's available, I'll make sure that you all have that in hand. So if you want to, you'll be able to begin that review prior to the July meeting, which is one of the reasons we wanted to have the July meeting, because they are looking to get that approval this year. Be in contact. What makes sense for you? I think it's going to be a heavy lift in terms of what would help digest that. It's going to be, it's 4 years of collector projects. There's a lot of decisions on the table with that.
Okay, that was a very substantive update. Park Tucson, Jill?
Hey, well, we didn't have a meeting because, as everyone, I've assumed, knows, Donovan Durbin passed very suddenly a couple weekends ago, and his staff is working, to kind of figure out what's going on. So we decided as a commission to postpone until next.
Oh, we're losing you, Jill.
I believe.
Why don't you put it in chat what you were going to say? You decided as a commission to postpone until
Gamal's job just took time. What?
Your connection is a little spotty. Can you just put in chat, we decided to postpone blah, blah, blah. Okay. Pedestrian Advisory Committee, Tariq is not here. Any update, Patrick? Okay. Transit Task Force, Riley.
No, I don't have any real updates to share today.
Okay. Bicycle Advisory Committee, Sophia?
So the BAC worked on two letters to send out last meeting. One of them was regarding the 22nd Street Bridge and the design review process, and then questioning the 13-foot lane that's right next to the pedestrian walkway that's going to be on the bridge. But it might be too late because of it's going to construction. And then the second letter was regarding 3rd Street in Alvernon, advocating for a traffic safety analysis, which is actually cool. There wasn't one there that we could find, but by using Strava, demonstrating that there's a lot of bicycle riders on that connecting point, then that's how we're kind of advocating for that traffic safety analysis. And then what was cool is that we learned that the city already has outlined an internal plan on what to do there. And then the rest of the meeting was spent just identifying goals for the rest of the year. I think an interesting one was there's energy to work on TPD reporting of crashes and fatalities on the street. So a sort of Vision Zero, I don't know if we're officially calling it that yet, but I think that's definitely good to see somebody ready to spearhead that.
Riley?
Sophia, who are the letters addressed to that you send out?
I actually don't know the specifics of that. I think it's ward members as well as the transportation department. I'm happy to share those with Patrick and then they could be emailed out.
Thank you. I was also just interested in seeing if the transit task force was motivated to do more letter writing. So a little bit inspired by that work you're doing.
Okay, great. Commission on Disability Issues, still nothing. Patrick? Okay. And wrap up next steps, future agenda items. So DTM staff update, Patrick.
Yeah, I've got a very brief presentation. There's been some requests to just get a kind of an ongoing tally of what's been happening in terms of safety on the street. So I've got the latest in terms of kind of the crash data for this year and a little bit looking back. So I'll be very brief with that. But I did want to share, and I think it's something we can start to build more into just kind of a standard agenda item. So that worked this time.
Well, not the presentation mode, but we can see your slide. Oh, there, now you got it.
Yeah, I unplugged my second monitor.
Oh, okay.
So this is what we are looking at year to date. This is based on the latest crash report we have received internally. So we are today have seen 42 fatalities on the city of Tucson streets this year, including 13 pedestrians, 3 bicyclists, 10 motorcyclists, and 16 vehicle deaths. We are just behind where we were tracking last year. Last year was a record year for fatalities, if you recall. We have seen a reduction in pedestrian fatalities, but we've seen an increase in vehicular fatalities. So it's really just shifted, and that could just be a matter of kind of, you know, those changing patterns we see year to year, but we are still on path to track to a very high number, kind of tracking with what we saw last year. And we're not seeing that rapid reduction as kind of behaviors and activities are starting to normalize a little more. So we really are looking to needing to be proactive and getting out there and thinking about safety kind of front and center. In terms of where that puts us over the last couple of years, you can see this is our trend. So overall traffic fatalities increased from 60 in 2017 on all city streets, all travelers, all users, to 84 in 2020, 2021, and then up to 99 last year again, which was just a shocking number and kind of
outside of our expectations and record setting. See, a lot of it is being driven by the uptick in pedestrian fatalities. So in 2017 and 2018, we were on 23, 24 pedestrian fatalities every year in the city of Tucson. A couple of years before that, we were seeing 16, 15 a year. In 2019 was the first year where we really saw that 50% of the roadway fatalities were pedestrians. And that number has really stayed high in the 30s. And then last year, 49 of the 99 roadway fatalities in the city of Tucson were pedestrians. So while it's only about 10% of the trips, it is 50% of the roadway fatals in the community. So we are kind of on track again, getting close to that 99 where we are as of today. So we're at 42, we're at 45 at this date last year. We will continue to track this and provide updates every month.
Thanks, Patrick. Riley, then Jennifer.
Thanks, Patrick. It would be nice also to see the severe injuries. I saw those, that there were other colors for those to see, not just, because I think sometimes we don't think about that, like sometimes people are, severely injured with impacts for the rest of their lives. And so I don't know if that's possible to add next time.
Not kind of as a tracking in kind of month to date, because the reports we get are the ones that involves a fatality. Retroactively, we can provide the kind of range of severe injuries, fatal crashes, non-injury crashes, and we can look at that trend over time, but there's going to be about a year or two lag on that.
Okay, thanks.
We could look to maybe have a representative from TPD. They are managing and maintaining that data. They share some of it with the Department of Transportation, if that was something, or maybe a quarterly update from the police department could be an option.
Jennifer?
I just want to make the comment that the Pedestrian Advisory Committee hasn't met since before the pandemic. So, and I don't know what can be done to get people appointed so this commission meets again. But that's all I want to say. I know Tariq's not here to say that, but I was also on that commission before I joined this one.
Jennifer.
Good. Any other updates from you, Patrick?
A couple things. We are reviewing a scope for a kind of a Vision Zero safety plan. We are in partnership with the county. We'll be looking to initiate that probably in this fall. Part of that exercise will be establishing a Ford Zero deaths or Vision Zero policy for the city, as well as a number of other systemic improvements and project-specific improvements, building on Move Tucson, something we can incorporate into Proposition 411, kind of more analytical. In terms of project-specific, we've delivered our first batch of Prop 411 repaving work, and I know we're a little late, I apologize. The next project really relevant to this group is going to be Bilby. We're going to be starting our public outreach efforts. We're getting very close to 15% design. So we'll have initial design available in August. We'll be focusing around Sunnyside High School for that outreach. We don't have dates on that yet, but we're looking around the second half of the month. We'll also be bringing that project then at 15% back through this group for review. And that'll be an opportunity kind of early in that design process to review the scope. There's a couple of alternatives that we're exploring at different cost levels that we want to run through this committee for approval and review, and kind of making sure that we are adhering to the complete streets principles. And at 15% is really where we have that opportunity to do it.
Excellent. Okay, we're at time. We wanted to check really quickly if anyone has any agenda items that you want to suggest for the next, for the future couple meetings. Speak now or send them to Patrick.
This is Ruth. I want to suggest that the RTA subcommittee reconvenes around August. That's doable. There weren't many of us. I think it was just Miranda and I that went to the first one, but they're going to present a program to the RTA board in July. So maybe we can meet again in August and start discussing our position on the RTA next plan. And then the other thing I want to suggest for the agenda is that the comprehensive operations analysis SunTran's doing at some point, can they come to us with their final report.
Yeah, and the timing on that is great. They will be doing public outreach in August, so they will have an initial draft ready in August for review.
Great.
Okay. Kylie is saying, don't forget I was at the RTSO committee too.
Yes, we had a couple non-CSCC people there.
Okay.
Jennifer?
And I noticed that Gracia put that maybe we would do a field trip on Limberlost before making a decision, but I don't know if that's something would have to happen early in the morning.
So. Midnight trip.
Yes.
What's the level of interest in trying to figure out how to do that amongst all of you? And before you have your decision meeting.
If we travel in an air-conditioned vehicle, I'll go.
There you go.
It's not so bad when the sun goes down at like 6:30 at night.
It's still 100 degrees, Patrick.
I know. Jonathan.
Thanks. Yeah, I just want to make a quick announcement. I don't think it got mentioned last month, but the county just got a $20 million raise grant that I worked on quite a bit earlier this year for improvements to West Valencia Road between Camino de la Tierra and Mission Road. And a big part of that raise grant has been to make that a complete street. Now it's going to be widening from 4 lanes to 6 lanes, but we really emphasize the pedestrian and bike and transit elements in that project. And as we start the design for that project, which is imminent, I'm going to be, insisting that we hold true to our promise to the feds and make it a complete street. So it's not going to be anything as revolutionary as, a project that, reduces lanes and builds, better bike and ped infrastructure instead of vehicular traffic, because there really is a need to move a fair amount of traffic through that corridor. But I think the money now is going to allow us to do, I'm hoping, really, really great things for pedestrians and bikes along that corridor, because there really aren't any facilities to speak of there for pedestrians, and it's really a poor condition. So I'm really happy that we got the grant and excited, and just want to make sure that you are all aware of it, because it is being described and planned as a complete street project for the county.
Excellent. Okay. If you have any other thoughts, you can send them to Patrick.
I can commit to sending out a doodle. If people are interested, we can look at some mornings or some evenings. I'm an evening person. I'll just put that out there for a visit to Limberlost. If there's enough appetite for it, we can throw something together. It can be informal.
Okay. You're good.
Thanks, Patrick. That'd be a great idea.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Hope you and stay cool-ish. Enjoy the rest of the month and the 4th.